Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Now, I'm going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. Now, before we get started, get out your calendars. We want to tell you again about some exciting news. James and I are taking Politics War Room on tour. So come see us live at the 92nd Street Y in New York City on September 19th. That's a week from Thursday, September 19th at the 92nd Street Y. And then in Atlanta on October 12th at the Variety Playhouse. And finally at Boston's Schubert Theater on November 2nd, 3 days before the election. Get tickets at politicon.com/tour. We can't wait to see you there. We're going to have some really interesting guests. Get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com and tell your friends about us. Please remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Beam, Miracle Made, and ExpressVPN. We thank you for supporting these sponsors, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Hey, James, Tuesday night's debate, Harris v. Trump, may be a seminal moment in this campaign. And that being the case, we looked far and wide. No holds barred to get the best political expert analyst that we could as a guest to talk about this. And we struck gold. We found him, James Carville. So therefore, it's going to be you. I'm going to briefly make a few points and turn over the analysis to the incomparable, Mr. Carville. I thought Harris very effectively did what she had to do on Tuesday night, focused enough on the future and brushed aside his tirades. She was especially effective on abortion, an issue that makes him just visibly squirm. Trump became increasingly unhinged. You know, we talked last week. I was a little worried he might bait her. Instead, she baited him, and he went bonkers. So talking about migrants eating cats and dogs and calling her a Marxist, I don't know if it's going to move the needle much, but it was a good night for Kamala Harris. Don't you agree?
I agree, but equally important, it was a bad night for him.
Right.
And you can conflate the two. I don't know what of the two is more important, but one thing I felt pretty good about, and you felt the same way, so I can disclose this to our viewers or listeners. We both thought she'd do well, and we're pretty upfront about it. Fox ran a big story about me saying that I thought Trump was walking into a trap, and he walked right into a trap. He really did.
Well, you had said you thought he might cancel, and perhaps he should have.
Yeah, it would have been a good idea. But you know, Al, there were a couple of things. I don't want to. Or clearly, by the public stuff we see, the Dow groups, the Instapoll, which affects coverage a lot, which 63-37.
For her, a direct reversal of what it was on June 27th.
Right. In 37, of just diehard party regulars. But the question is, will it drive voting behavior? So when you know, we do polls, and we'd say, such and such said this, do you agree or disagree with that? That's not the right question. The question is, having heard this, does this make you more or less likely to vote for someone? So we know that people voted that she won the debate. It's very preliminary. It's not overly scientific, but I suspect that will hold up. I have heard that there were a couple of questions that were asked by some people that voting behavior, and that it did change in her direction some. This is way preliminary, but what I would say is what we want to look at today is Wednesday, probably over the weekend polls or early next week, see if this has had, if this has driven anything in the vote. I'm pretty confident that she won the debate or he lost it. And it matters something. It matters a little bit. Did she win more than he lose more? And I thought it was an eventful night. I mean, I felt very good about it, obviously. I was asking a lot of Democrats, you included, you know, what did you see wrong with it? Because Democrats are always going to find something that they can criticize. But boy, there was very little that you could criticize in this thing from the standpoint of being a Democrat, I think.
Yeah, one leading indicator, James, was that immediately afterwards, Brian Fallon, her communications person, said, let's have another debate. I'm not sure that they really want to have another debate, but Trump wants to have three on Fox. I think that's a non-starter.
He won the debate. you don't understand that.
James, God you're here to tell me that, because I didn't have any idea.
Well, he was very bullish on his performance. I believe that he talked about 91% or something. and she's already said she'll do another debate. And he said he doesn't think he right. Of course, it doesn't matter what he says, but. My favorite little thing about it is CNN, that guy Daniel Dale, he was from Toronto and they hired him as a fact checker. He lied 33 times and Harris lied once. Okay, 33-1 baseball game. We didn't do too good.
God, Nick Saban would love that record. James, you know, it is a point that we picked up on in recent weeks. The Nikki Haley's of the world said he needs to talk about policy, not just the familiar. Well, we saw last night why he can't talk much about policy other than railing about undocumented workers. He's going to deport 10 million of them, be a social and economic disaster, and his false claims about tariffs. He didn't have anything to say. Doesn't have a health care policy. After 9 years, has no idea what it is. When they moved to his tax policy, he immediately shifted to immigration. He says on Obamacare, he said it sucks, but I don't know what I would do if I got rid of it. And on foreign policy, his hero is Viktor Orban, the most autocratic government leader in Europe. So I'm sorry, Governor Haley and Lindsey Graham, or Squiggly T. Biscuit, as Chris Buckley calls him. He can't talk about policy because he doesn't have any.
So Paul McGallis texts me. He says, if immigrants are eating lap dogs, shouldn't Lindsey Graham be really worried?
That was a high point. There's no question. So, you know, to some extent, his performance reminded me of his 2017 inaugural. Remember when he talked about American carnage, and afterwards, President George W. Bush said that was some crazy shit.
That was weird. No, I said that was some weird shit.
Weird shit, right?
But so they were talking. I love the issues caucus. See, he just talked about the issues. Right. Look, we don't like the tweets, but we like the issues. Okay, and so the big issue was the southern border. She more than acquitted herself last night. I thought she was pretty good on that. And so they go to him, and he's talking about crowd size. So he's got the number one issue that he should have, that the issue chorus is saying, just talk about the issues. Okay, you had a chance to talk about issues, and you talked about crowd size. It was the more that I think about it, you know, I went to bed last night, you know, I texted back and forth, and I was feeling pretty good. And then when I thought about it, and I looked at the clips and looked at some of the coverage, and particularly looked at some of the conservative coverage, I mean, they were kind of mean to him.
Yeah, yeah. How dare you disappoint us? Wall Street Journal right. editorial page, Ross Douthat, and others.
Did you expect something else?
Yeah.
All right. Really? What did you think was going to happen?
James, go ahead.
I thought she was particularly well prepared. I always thought that she would be. I think when we come out there, there's a couple MVPs. They all did a good job. Don't get me wrong. Two people you may have heard it less of. I know Philippe Raines was great.
That's what I heard. He was Trump. Reliable. He played Trump.
He played Trump, and he dressed in like Trump clothes. I don't. He might have put a wig on. All right, but he really, really took his role very seriously, and I'm pretty sure that Michael Sheehan was in there, and you could see Michael at work. And I mean, one of the killer lines was. But she said, "I'm not Joe Biden."
Right.
And they, you know, they rehearsed that seven times. But I'm not you either.
You know, thinking of Michael Sheehan, I agree with you totally on him.
I have to verify Michael kill us for saying for missing his name. But I suspect he was in that prep, and I suspect that he made a huge difference. But you know, they've spent 4 days. That's great. Who cares? Spent a week doing practice every line.
James, the other point about if I think Michael Sheehan was there, and if he was, his signature was all over her cutaways. Where mm-hmm. what she was doing while he was going, and she was looking serious. She didn't grimace or anything. At one point, she put her hand on her chin in amusement and looked at him. And I was with George Stevens, the great movie producer, who said his father, the great director, said that cutaways, if you cut away to Jimmy Stewart, you know you have a great scene because he's just that good. Her cutaways last night while he was speaking were really good.
Michael teaches that minute after minute. You're never off camera.
Right. Right.
Okay. Never scowl. Never, you know, furrow your brow or whatever. You know, what do you do when you're under attack? You take a pencil. You act like you're writing. You look down. You look up. You might smile. You might not. I mean, there's a whole protocol. I'd love to do a 15-minute special on behind the scenes at debate prep.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, how do you do it? And maybe at a point we can get somebody who was instrumental in this debate prep on the show to just talk about it. Probably better than
well, Michael doesn't like to go public very often, but he is terrific. And I talk to him, as you do periodically. So let me check with him. Let me make one final point. You may have more observations. That's on the moderators. My initial instinct was to be critical for one reason. I'm less so now. The right wing is all over them. I mean, the apologists from bootlickers like Lindsey Graham to the fallen from grace, supposed journalist Megyn Kelly, are saying it was 3-on-1. That's total complete bullshit. They did fact check Trump a few times, two or three, as you say. The guy, Daniel Dale, found 33 lies. So, you know, they fact checked 5 or 10%. There were things like when he said that in Springfield, Ohio, the migrants were eating cats and dogs. And the people in Springfield, Ohio, the leader said, this is not true. There's no incident of that at all. And when he said on the other occasion, the Democrats favor abortion up to 9 months and even after birth, just simply not true. It's illegal. So I think those were absolutely appropriate fact checks. On the other side, I thought that he did let Trump David Muir let Trump run over him a few times. He went on when he wasn't supposed to. He spoke for five more minutes than Harris did. In fact, maybe that was a break for Harris. The more Trump spoke, the worse it got. And so I would give them at least a B minus. And the fact checking they did, the selective fact checking, was what CNN should have done last June and didn't.
So I guess this is something that we could discuss it at a little more length at a different time. How involved should moderators be? Should they just be umpires? If he's going to do the fact check, and he said, well, we should note that Donald Trump went 5 minutes over with the Greek 211. Should you do that kind of stuff? You should just let people draw their own conclusions. A moderator should, I guess, should kind of be unremarkable. If you go to the baseball game and you didn't notice the umpires, then that's the highest compliment you can pay to the umpires.
Yeah, James, I think I use the term selectively, and that's what I think. I mean, I don't think that, when Trump said I created the greatest economy in the history of the world, you don't fact check that. I mean, that's an opinion. But when he does say that basically Democrats are for killing babies after they're born, I mean, that's just so blatantly untrue that I think it's justifiable. But very selective.
What moderator could do at that point is say, Vice President Harris, you're a lifelong Democrat. Is that true, what he just said?
Well, that may be, yeah.
I don't know. But I think it's, I'm not saying that you're wrong or you're right. All right? But, maybe that somebody should do a handbook for debate moderators. You're not going to get people to agree on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand that. But I think for the most part, it was a fair game was played last night. You might argue with one call here, yep. And there was it was an interference call. It was something like that. But for the most part, to the extent that you could, I think you got a pretty good idea of who both were and how well they were prepared and what they did. And that's success.
It was the best, actually, in many ways, it was the best presidential debate in a long time. Now, the competition hasn't been that tough, but it really was, and you did. The important point is you got a better feel for Kamala Harris, and if you thought there was a new Trump last night, would have dissuaded you.
It's never going to be. Now, the question is going to be, we'll have the answer shortly, by Friday, at the latest. Whose fault was this? Who's he going to blame? And I can tell you right now, Chris LaCivita, Corey Lewandowski, Susie Wiles, Bannon, if he's out of jail.
He's in jail. He's in jail still.
I think he's getting close to getting out. But whatever.
Yeah.
There is a big fur flying in Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster or wherever they are, because we know one person that's not at fault. And that's Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And some faction is going to get, the leaks are coming. Fox and Newsmax, the whole thing is going to be coming. And I love the delicious aftermath of the finger pointing.
Oh.
And you know you're going to have it.
You want a behind-the-scenes video of debate prep. I want a behind-the-scenes video of Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster in the next couple of days.
Both of them are going to be fascinating. But I think that we're in fascinating times. And again, is he going to decide that he wants to do another debate?
What do you think? And what should she do?
Well, she said she'd do one.
Yeah, but okay. Which one and where and, who?
If I'm her, why wouldn't I?
Would you do a Fox debate?
But what she has now is a gift. She has confidence. And if I were her people, I'd say, go meet him 52% of the way. I mean, you don't need it like you need it. The subtle thing about this thing, Alice Race, is, given the sort of polls that came out 3 or 4 days ago,
right.
It kind of shifted a little bit to like he was in charge. All right. T- today she's more in charge. And that's, you know, I can't argue how big the bump, if there's going to be a bump or the changes, but there has been a subtle shift in dynamic in this race. I'm pretty confident about that.
Would if the choice is a Fox debate, would you do it if you were her?
I would.
Mm-hmm.
It, because Fox would be limited. I mean, first of all, she would have and Brent Baier is not the same thing as Laura Ingraham.
Right.
I mean, there's this whole thing where Fox becomes a whole word that means everything to everybody. Even in Fox, there are distinctions. And if she agreed to Fox, she would have a lot more input on the moderator, the format, anything else, than if she agreed to CNN or MSNBC or
right.
something like
right.
that.
Right.
I mean, you got to assess what advantages would I have. And I think she has confidence now. I think she feels like, I got this guy's number. I can do this. And I would certainly say I would do it. Because it's the easiest thing in the world is to get out of a debate and say, well, it was just unreasonable and it demands and we couldn't go along with it. But I got a feeling that Fox would give her both anything she asked for to get this debate. This is a ratings bonanza. This is a money. ABC, they were scared to death this debate wouldn't go on. It was a real coup for that. And she's got the dynamic in this race has shifted. I don't know how the polls have shifted, but I think the dynamic is clearly shifted.
Well,
we
look forward to it. And, you know, the one thing, we did say she was going to do well. And you know what, James? This is one of those times we were right. She did do
that's
well.
That's not always. Yeah, I don't want to say that we're always right. But in this one, I can feel it coming. I think the question you asked about the next one is important. But I do think there has been a appreciable shift in the power dynamic here.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's not a reach to say the fate of the country could come down to the battleground state of Georgia. So James and I are going there to do our part. We're marching to Georgia. We're taking Politics War Room to Atlanta for a live show on October 12th at the Variety Playhouse. It's going to be a great time.
Well, I can promise them that they're going to have a good time. And I can promise them that we're going to have a very lively conversation about what's going on, the centrality of Georgia to everything. By the way, I hesitate to point out, it's a special place in my heart. It's the state of my birth. It was the state of one of my most satisfying political victories, I guess, too, if you count the reelection of Governor Zell Miller. It's a state where the first president of LSU had a sort of impact on the state of Georgia, if you will. You talked about marching through Georgia. He was the guy that marched through Georgia. And you can go, at least you could in the 90s, I suspect you still can, go to underground Atlanta and still see scars of where Atlanta was burnt. I don't think Sherman intentionally meant to burn Atlanta. He meant to burn certain ammunition stocks and stuff, but I don't think they gave them. They were not overly concerned that the fire got out of control. We both have a lot of family connections to Georgia and a lot of friends there.
Yeah.
I look forward to it. It's a great, you know, and by the way, it's easy to get to. There's a lot of flights to Atlanta.
Right. It's going to be an incredible show, and you'll never forget that you helped us bring the vibes to Atlanta that put Kamala Harris in the Oval Office. All you have to do is go to politicon.com/tour. That's politicon.com/tour and get your tickets for October 12th at the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, don't wait. They're going fast, and we want to see as many of you there as we can. So head to politicon.com/tour now to get your tickets. The road to the White House is starting. We'll see you there. Okay, James, finally, what should Harris do looking ahead?
Well, I'm a big believer that in a way that, like, a Civil War general would look at the terrain. And it was very important, the certain high ground, where the terrain goes. I think a campaign strategist needs to look at the calendar. Now, I want to say something that has not been mentioned, you've seen very little about. What is the date today that we're doing this?
We're doing it on the 11th of September.
Remember that day?
Yep.
Okay. It is receded. I'm not saying it's a good thing or bad thing, but it's amazing that we were so defined by the 11th of September, and now we barely remember it. It's not a knock on us. It's just a knock on the way that human history, the human mind works. I think going forward, there's two dates that the Harris campaign needs to be aware of, and it I think offers them opportunity to be heard. One is 18 September, right? So, well, what is 18 September? Okay, that's the date that the Fed meets. So to people that we know, like us, this is already priced in the market. Okay, you would not go on CNBC or one of these business shows and mention that because everybody, quote, knows, unquote, they're going to cut rates. Actually, there is some suspense as to whether they cut rates a quarter of a point or, I don't know, 25 basis points. I have it. They talk in a lingo or half. And they'll issue a statement about future guidance. But when people see this, there's actually some decent economic news out there. And people see this, and this is the first time that they're going to hear that interest rates may be coming down. And the point I want to make is the question is not, is this a good economy or bad economy? Choose one. I think it's pretty clear that even right now, we would have more people saying it's a bad economy, a not very good economy. But there's going to be a point, and I'm hope that we reached it, where people feel like they have something to lose. All right, and I thought she did a good job talking about Trump's tariffs last night, about 18 Nobel laureates. In one sense, who gives a shit with 18 Nobel laureates? In another sense, people do because they feel like, hey, in Wall Street Journal this morning, headline in a journal, first time since pandemic, incomes are up 4%, and they're just for inflation. All right, so if this thing shifts to the point where you're not going to get people to say the economy is good, but you're going to get people say that say we have something at risk here, that's a pretty big event. And you're going to have people say that before they're going to admit that it's good. The second big date is the 7th of October, which is going to be the one-year anniversary of the Hamas intrusions, or whatever you want to call it. And that gives her, it's going to be a lot of attention paid to that. You know, she can give a big kind of speech on her kind of views of the Middle East. And it can be quasi-generic, but she's going to get credit. She's going to get coverage. You know, there's a lot of, we know there's 1,000 foreign policy types that can, you know, give her advice and how she say it. I remember we did the foreign policy stuff at Georgetown. Maybe she needs to schedule events. Who cares? It's not the most crazy thing. Go to the Detroit Economic Club and open it for questions. They're not going to, your good chance to be elected President of the United States, they're going to be respectful. But you got two events that you can play off of. And that's why I say that good campaigns look at the calendar the way that good generals look at the terrain. And she has an opportunity in both, but I do think it's significant. And it doesn't say much about us, but the basically September 11th has receded, And I'm sure the terrorists will come back and people say we should have remembered. Understand that. But it's just the calendar is really an important thing in political campaigns.
Okay, September 18th and October 7th. Remember that out there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now for the outrage of the week. House Republicans have thrown in the towel on their witch hunts against President Biden and his troubled son, Hunter. But in the closing weeks, these pitiful imitators of Sherlock Holmes are trying to dig up dirt on Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. They want to haul Walz in about a federal food program in Minnesota. Oh boy, they go after big stuff. The always predictable and usually wrong Elise Stefanik is demanding an inquiry into a Harris staffer's connection to any Iranian intelligence. You know, that's really rich. Stefanik had declared that President Biden was involved in, I quote, the biggest political corruption scandal in my lifetime, but I would say even the last 100 years, end quote. I guess poor Elise never took a history course at Harvard. Of course, as they tried to impeach Biden, they came up with no evidence whatsoever, none. But there were two supposedly critical sources that Stefanik, Comer, and Jim Jordan. James, you remember Jim Jordan, the one accused by at least six Ohio State wrestlers of covering up sexual abuse when he worked there. Anyway, they had two bombshell witnesses. Both were indicted. One was tied to Russian intelligence, the other to Chinese intelligence. You can't make this stuff up. These House Republicans are the most incompetent clowns I have ever seen in more than 50 years of covering and observing congressional investigations.
You know, I guess my outrage is kind of dovetails with yours. People say, well, we need a healthy two-party system, and you know, we should have a kind of center-left party and a center-right party, probably some truth to that. But I think what we have more than an ideological disaster of the Republican Party, which, you know, Dick Cheney has said, I'm voting for a Democrat. I mean, stop it really. But what you really have is a massively incompetent political party. You saw that demonstrated time and time and time again in these congressional hearings. I mean, James Comer or Jim G.Y.M. Jordan or Matt Gaetz, or these people, they're not just political, ideological clowns. They're competence clowns. And you see this time and time again. What you saw on the part of Trump last night was not that he was just crazy and not grounded and whatever. There was no competence. There was no preparation. All right, I would give my wife a shout out. When she was Cheney's communications person, counsel to the vice president, you know, when he did a debate, he was competent. I mean, we debated at John Edwards in 2004. We all kind of thought Edwards was going to win. He was an experienced trial lawyer. I mean, people say that, well, Harris doesn't do long-form interviews. Cheney was famous for sitting there for 40 minutes with Tim Russert. They disagreed, but he was competent. You didn't look at Dick Cheney. You said, maybe I don't like him. I don't like his wars. I think he's orthodox. I don't think he has a great sense of humor. I think, but you never looked at Cheney and said he was ill-prepared. And if you were a Republican, particularly a conservative Republican, you didn't look at him and say, oh, my God, this guy's a clown. I can't believe that they would sit down Sunday morning and be totally unprepared and stupid. And I, of course, I think there's, it was not ideology of Trump, it's just criminality. And they have a problem. They really, really have a competence problem. They're incompetent people, and they're very tolerant of incompetence. And that's just a fact of American life, that the Republican, and you look at these congressional people, you will not tell me that okay, we're both not very secret about our general worldview tends to trend center-left. But if there were people in a Democratic Party that were this massively incompetent, that were buffoons of this level, we would get mad about it. And they don't seem to care. This seems to be the Jim Jordans and Jim Cramers and Elise Stefanik's. They just blend in with the wallpaper. And I don't want to sound like I'm being a great, you know, chin-scratching American, but I don't expect that we're going to have two parties I agree with. But is it too much to expect just rudimentary confidence from one party? I don't think it is.
Well, they sure don't have it in the House.
They don't. And they don't seem to give a shit.
Right. No.
They don't seem to give a shit. They seem to be fine with that.
And also look at the lemmings who went along with them. I mean, it wasn't just those three and four and five, but the lemmings who went along with all these. The fake impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. It just, you know, there ought to be some accountability for that.
Yeah, the other thing is, I can say something nice about Dick Cheney. He said, I'm voting for Harris, period, end of memo. I don't want to call anybody out by name, but let me give you two initials that I want to call out. Rex Tillerson and Jim Mattis. If I hear one more story about how they think Trump is a buffoon or is an idiot, why don't you say something? What are you scared? Somebody's not going to play gin rummy with you at the Dallas Country Club or some retired four-star is not going to sit out and have dinner with you and your wife at the officers' club? I mean, come on, people. The country's at risk. You know something, say something. Do what Cheney did. You don't have to do what Liz did and endorse Colin Howard, but just issue a statement. I'm voting for Harris. You don't have to say any more. Why are you just sitting there watching this goddamn idiot have a chance to be elected?
Well, I do think they have to say that, but they have to say more. They have to say that Trump, they know, is an existential danger to Americans' national interest. I think, you know, that's part of the endorsement because that's what they know. That's the reason they're endorsing.
If they just said, I'm voting for Harris, and then they could leak and, you know, they could talk to Jeffrey Goldberg, but God damn
that's
it,
not,
what are you
that's
doing?
Not, I don't, well, I think they got to go further. But anyway, moving
okay,
on.
Whatever. They hadn't even done the minimum yet.
Well, that's right. And if they do the minimum, maybe we can build, but they got to get there first. The week of the election is going to be electric. And James and I want to share one of those moments with you. We're taking Politics War Room live to Boston. What better venue than the Schubert Theater on November the 2nd, 3 days before the election? We're going to rally the troops, hear from a special guest, and celebrate Kamala's upcoming win with our listeners in person. The energy is going to be crazy. Well, what about it, James? Do you think we can get Massachusetts so fired up that Kamala wins the state by, I don't know, 40 points?
Well, you know, presumably we will win Massachusetts. What a great city to go to. I love Boston. We've got a lot of friends there. I hope people show up. It'll be exciting. I think it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be lively. you know, the one thing about Boston and the metropolitan Boston area, they got one of every kind you can imagine in the United States, and I hope they all show up. But it's just everything is manageable ass, not very far from the airport. And the streets are a little confusing because they were laid out for, you know, cows. But you know, you get a good sense of direction. I love Boston. I like to go to, I guess it's called the East End or something, where the great Italian restaurants are. By the way, I'll never forget, and let's just mention the great James Earl Jones. And how can you ever forget the Field of Dreams when Kevin Costner shows up there?
Yep.
I kept thinking in 92, you know, I don't know, CNN, but that he used to have that this, it was in 92, it was like the start, cable TV was just getting started. And we had it all the time. And I'll just never forget, this is CNN. That'll bring that back.
I met James, I met him one time with my son. I took Benjamin when he was 10 years old. His mother wasn't happy because we went down to Wake Forest to watch Tim Duncan's final basketball game. And it was incredible. He was there. James Jones was there. And what connection he had to Duncan, I don't know. But it was a real, real thrill. We want everyone listening to join us on the tour during the election's final stretch. Now, all you have to do is go to politicon.com/tour and get your ticket for November 2nd at the Schubert Theater in Boston, Massachusetts. Don't wait. They're going fast, and we want to see as many of you there as we can. So head to politicon.com/tour to get your tickets for November 2. We can't wait to see you there.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Our listener questions this week are as good as ever, and it is really hard to pick them out. They're mostly, as you might imagine, about American politics and the presidential election. Chris in West Chicago, Illinois, says, with each passing day, it'll be harder to change the numbers. What are the one or two things the campaign, I'm sure that Chris is referring to the Harris campaign, can do that might yield a noticeable gain? James?
I appreciate the question. It's a good question. I don't know if you have one thing you can do, but you can do a series of things. And I think a big thing happened during the debate. And I think if you try one single thing, it generally doesn't work. But we talked about it on the show that they could use the calendar to their advantage. I think that they're going to have more kind of, I think the Cheney endorsement or the Cheney thing that he voted for, I think it's going to get us some votes in some key places, like the Wow counties around Milwaukee. I think that she's going to run 3 or 4 points ahead of Democratic performance there. I think that Maricopa in Arizona, I think that it's like Scottsdale, she'll run a little bit ahead of Democratic performance. I think when you go up on Main Line in Montgomery of Delaware and Chester, those kind of places, I think she can run even parts of Allegheny a couple of 3 points ahead of Democratic performance, and that could make a difference. But
if she does that, James, she wins Wisconsin, Arizona, and Pennsylvania.
I agree. So adamant that Tillerson and Mattis quit telling other people what the hell they think and tell the country what the hell they think.
Ross in Portland, Maine says, I think we could go a long way to helping keep Social Security solvent by eliminating the income limit. Is my idea too simplistic or realistic? No, it's not, Ross. And let me just say as an aside, the worst idea in the world is Donald Trump's to remove all taxes from Social Security benefits. First of all, it would primarily go to upper income. People who are barely subsisting on Social Security, they hardly pay any taxes anyway on that. Secondly, according to the trust fund, by 2033, it'll be insolvent, which then mandates a 21% across-the-board cut. That's not going to happen. But the way to prevent it, the best way is to raise that income limit. I think it's now about 100, you pay Social Security taxes on about the first 150,000. If you removed it altogether, you raised it, you doubled it up to 300,000, that'd bring in a bunch of revenue. And I think it's the best way to deal with Social Security.
You know, I'll just register a concern here. I think that always, every time I turn around, Social Security is going to be insolvent by some year. And so I said, well, I'm insolvent. It's just not going to take as much in as it took in, or something like that. I believe Social Security's genius is that it applies to everybody. If you want to raise the income, if it's 150, I think what you're alluding to, after you reach a certain amount that you pay in, you don't have to pay in more. And by the way, it's a lot. It's a lot for employees. I think like there used to be 7.85 for individuals.
It's 6. It's 7.65, but only I think 5.5 or something of that is Social Security.
If you start raising it for employers and individuals, you're going to have a huge pushback. I mean, that would be a really big tax increase of people. And I'm not for. Look, if you can certainly rate, we've had income tax applied to Social Security benefits of people over a certain income. I'm totally for that. I'm very reluctant about changing the basic structure of Social Security. It's worked really well. It's really popular. We don't want to turn these billionaires against it. Have a big lobbying program.
I'm not for changing the structure. I mean, they've raised that limit probably a dozen times over the years. Happens all the time.
I'd raise it to infinity. Okay, that's what I'm saying. I'd raise it. If you want to raise another $50,000,
well,
that keeps the structure.
It's better than cutting benefits.
I think you could do, you know, that there's a thousand things you can do, and why does it have to be solvent? Maybe you have to take somebody out to general fund. But I don't know. I'm just reluctant to mess with the basic way that it works.
Well, raising the income limit doesn't mess with the basic way.
You can raise it, but you can't. I don't think you should raise it to infinity.
I agree. I said maybe double it, maybe go up 100,000 or whatever. It's whatever the numbers show.
Right.
Tony, and this is a question because it's from a great place, which I've never heard of. Tony in Hohenhausen, Germany. Let me repeat that again. Tony is from Hohenhausen, Germany. Tony, it's great to have you listening to us. Tony says, we obviously need a large cohort of undecided voters to win. Can we safely assume that if a voter is undecided at this point, they're just not well read? If so, shouldn't we keep the messages simple instead of having mainstream media's wonkish pundits, I don't think he means us, James, debate the nuances of Kamala's policy? Not a bad question coming from, I want to repeat it again, Hohenhausen, Germany.
It's a good question. And what we don't know, and there's this whole idea of what happens to undecided voters. And there's been a lot of research. There's been a lot of callbacks. I think more the way to look at it is that loosely aligned voters, kind of undecided, true undecided. If you see a poll that's anything much above 7 or 8%, it's not going to be a very reliable poll. They're actually, the public is less than 7 or 8. There's 7 or 8 true independents. I see some of these polls say it's 51-49. I guess they allocate undecided some kind of way.
Right.
I can't tell you the number of hours that I've spent discussing with people what happens to undecided, where do they go in the ether of the electorate. But they are the big thing that encouraged me about last night is there were 28% of people said they'd like to know more about Harris. Only 9% would like to know about Trump. I think what they found out last night was mostly favorable about her and mostly unfavorable about him.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
I don't know where an undecided vote ends and a loosely aligned vote begins, but it's not a clear dividing line.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mike in West Caulfield, New Jersey says, why don't Democrats make more of an effort to try to appeal to the sports-enthused male? I would note that one big thing we haven't mentioned yet is after the debate, Taylor Swift endorsed Kamala Harris. And Taylor, we hope you bring your significant other, Travis Kelce, with you. And I think that would help. I think athletes help a little bit. Not much. I mean, LeBron James has been very active in campaigns, and as has some others. I would tell you one thing to look for, with all the money the Harris people have, and the Obama people aren't poor, I think there's going to be a lot of ads on Sunday night and Monday night football. But you raise a good point, Mike. There's no magic panacea, but they ought to do a little bit more.
So this is the question. So Taylor Swift, based on, you know, the momentum of the night where Paris clearly had a better debate than Trump, she comes out. What would you have done if you were a grand poopah on the whole thing? And it was this whole kind of speculation. Boy, if Taylor Swift comes out, Taylor Swift's endorsed, it's going to be a lot. I think it kind of got lost in the after debate coverage. I would criticize Taylor Swift from what I know about it. She's perfectly well-raised, massively talented. Everything I know about her boyfriend and the family is massively positive. You can't unring the bell, but a good question is, would it have been better on a Sunday before an NFL game?
James, that's the world you and I live in. The world that she lives in, let me tell you, there wasn't a Swiftie alive last night, today, or tomorrow who's not aware of that. And it's all over social media. We need to ask our friend William Woodson what effect to have. I mean,
I just leave the question open. If you can redo it, there's a big question that's going to get answered in this campaign. Because Trump doesn't have, so there's always this big thing. And you would cover campaigns, I would work on campaigns, and people would sit ad nauseum and say, how much feel matters, how much television matters, how much earned media? We used to have names like that. Well, we're getting ready to find out because Trump doesn't have any field operation. It's not. And Harris,
his field operation is trying to stifle the vote and trying to get local
people. You have
people
a county
to,
headquarters, yeah, and you have walking list and phone list, and you got sort of this, and you got county chairman, and you got the sort of people. And we spent a lot of our lives working these people, covering them, and, who can I talk to? I'm going to Western Pennsylvania. Give a talk to these people. They don't have any of that shit.
Right. Right.
And Harris has a lot. And you know how many conversations that you've had in your professional life. How much of every dollar, how much you should allocate for this or that. All right. That's not a conversation we're having even now. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. And he said, well, a good ground game is worth a point and a half. We would say stuff like that. I don't say we're wrong or right, but it forced you to think about it. Look, no one is talking about a good ground game because there's no ground game. It's just been a real shift in the way people look at politics or cover it. But we don't think about the counting. And, you know, now it's the best stuff are these postcard lists that people write out there. We're going to see if this matters any.
Here's another one from James of Campaigns of What Matters. James in Oakland, California, where she's from, Harris is from, says in 2020, Trump constantly ranted about early voting and how it's rigged. Why in 2024 is he not doing that? Has he suddenly had a change of heart about early voting?
Yeah, somebody explained to me that a lot of people at early voting will vote for you.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. That's what I don't know the answer to. And maybe a good political scientist has done this. Is this early voting, we used to have this big, remember absentee voting was a big thing, and if it was easy, does that help? And do people vote early, but they voted on election day anyway? Is it a turnout enhancer? Does it help one party or the other? I think a lot of, maybe they're answered, but I don't know the answer, so it seems to me to be pretty inconclusive.
Yeah, yeah. Paul in San Antonio, Texas. Says, listening to our show the last couple of weeks, he said, like you all, I am not a fan of the current prime minister of Israel. In your podcast, you pinned the lack of progress on the hostage negotiations on Netanyahu. Do you think Hamas is negotiating in good faith? Not really, but what I do think is if Netanyahu gives them an excuse to also negotiate the way they want to negotiate, if he would take a credible position and try to negotiate, I think there would be a lot of pressure on Hamas, not from us because they don't care about us, but from other Arab countries, including those that support them. But Bibi doesn't want to negotiate in good faith because Bibi has one mission, and that's to stay in office. And if he negotiates in good faith, as our guest David Ignatius told us, and they come up with a plan, he likely will lose his coalition. And if he loses that coalition and he's out of office, you know where Bibi's going to end up, James?
The jail.
In the slammer.
Yeah,
so I do blame Bibi a lot, but unfortunately he's not up until 2026. So that makes me a pessimist about what's going on over there.
The good faith in Bibi Netanyahu, that's four words that should never be used in the same paragraph.
The last question comes from Frankie in Troy, Ohio. And Frankie asked, are campaign signs a reliable predictor for posters and everything? And are Dems, the second two-part question, second is, are Dems sending any resources to Ohio this year?
Well, I got an interesting text from a friend of mine who's working in South Carolina, which is hardly a swing state. And he says, I got it 2 hours ago. It said, I don't know what the hell this means, but we've had a 300% increase in yard sign requests since the debate in South Carolina.
That's for Harris?
Yes, for Harris. I remember when I was working in Kansas on the referendum, the post-Dobbs referendum, and I think I pointed it out to you that I talked to the sign people, and they said, we're getting signs in western Kansas that people would never put up a sign for Biden or Hillary. And I took that as a kind of positive thing that, you know, if you're the accountant or the pharmacist at a, you know, Garden City, Kansas, you might be a Democrat, but you're the optometrist, you're not going to put a sign up because you think it's going to cost your business.
Right.
But apparently I took great solace in the fact that they were willing to put up, which was in a vote no sign. So I'd certainly like for the sign people to call me and say, man, we got a spike in sign requests. I don't know I know it's good news. I just don't know how good. But it's a good question. It is.
And Frankie's question on Ohio. Yes, National Dems will be sending resources to Ohio because they have a critical Senate race and probably two competitive House races. My guess is that Harris and Walz are not going to spend much time or resources in Ohio unless they think they're going to be winning this thing by 7 or 8 points, which unfortunately is unlikely.
I keep coming back. Florida, Florida, Florida.
Yeah. Okay, keep those letters coming in, emails coming in to Politicon. They're great questions. If we didn't get to them this week, we'll try next week, but thank you. Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. Now remember, to get your tickets for the Politics War Room tour, James and I are bringing the podcast live on stage at the 92nd Street Y in New York City on September 19th. Special guests include Bill Bradley, and then the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta on October 12th, and Boston's Schubert Theater on November 2, 3 days before the big election. Now, you get your tickets at politicon.com/tour, and we really can't wait to see you there. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Now, following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Beam, Miracle Made, and Express VPN in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.